Hi, how are you, Susie?
I'm very well, thanks. Living the dream.
Well, making a film like Saltburn and watching it is like a dream, a fever dream.
Absolutely.
You're the last piece of my artisan puzzle here, Susie. Between Linus and Sophie and you, you guys have created a perfect fever dream.
Hey, nice one. Thank you.
Just outstanding. And I'm very curious for you, when you got Emerald's script or when you first spoke to her, do you recall what your first thought was when you saw this story and what it was from a psychological standpoint that you had to translate into production design and visual?
Well, I mean, the beauty is because Emerald wrote it as well, there's something immediate about speaking to a filmmaker like that. But, you know, Emerald's had this project floating around in her imagination for many years, so she knows what she once, and luckily I seem to have picked up the same vibes from her, in so my mood boards were very similar to hers. And I think what inspired me was, on reading the script, it felt like a traditional gothic British upper class tight story, but that could take place in any time. It was timeless, you know. Desire, love, obsession you know, ancient years and years, every century this story could have taken place, but it was taking place in relatively contemporary years. And that really interests me. I've worked on a lot of period films, and it was really fun to play with a contemporary film that had a period vibe about it, you know. So
I love what you did with Mr. Turner. I was so in love with what you did on that film.
Thank you.
So I knew that a period piece was like this period that's contemporary was definitely in your wheelhouse to embrace the beauty and the history and even the terror, the quiet, silent terror of a 300-year-old mansion.
And yeah, well, older than that, even. I think there's medieval aspects to that Saltburn house as well that we found. So, yeah, there was definitely that sort of vibe of playing the contemporary culture with British uptight tradition and really mashing it up. And Emerald and I spoke a lot, not just about the visuals, but about the smell, about the texture, about the taste. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about what are these family going to eat, and we researched. You know, I had a great food economist to research the type of food that this level of aristocracy would eat. And, you know, I felt like, well, we did. In some of the rooms, we dressed particular smells of aftershave or perfumes just to help the characters inhabit their worlds. Because I think the one thing I've learned, particularly from my time on films like Mr. Turner and working with Mike Lee, is that part of my job is to make a world that the characters, the actors, when they walk on set, don't have to worry about. You know, they feel comfortable in their environment. This is their house, this is their chair, this is the car they drive. So they don't have to, that, you know, first couple of days on set, feel uncomfortable in the environment. I want them to be absolutely own it. And it's really important our Cat and family, you know, all the cast felt that, particularly in Saltburn, but also in the student rooms, and also Oliver's mum and dad's house, you know, all needed to have that layer of, okay, they've lived here for years.
I have to say, when it comes to the university and the student rooms, I actually, one of the things that I thought of when we see Felix's room is, my God, how much rancid food is underneath the bed and all over the floor. It made me think of my brother, who always used to shove plates under his bed with food left on it.
Why does he do that? I know, it's weird, isn't it? But there's such a funny story about that room. When we were recceing very early on, we went to scout Oxford University for real, because some of the exteriors we do in Oxford University. But it happened that one of the staff members there said that there was a student who was happy for us to go and look at his room, just to get a sort of vibe of how those rooms are, because they're incredible. All these students live in these amazing accommodations overlooking gorgeous courtyards, manicured to within an inch of their life. So we went, Emerald and I went to have a look at this particular student's room, and he was just walking out, and he said, "I've tied it up for you." And we walked in, and I'm not kidding, the smell was noxious. It was a classic 19-year-old boy's room. There were underpants and socks amid, you know, empty takeaway cartons, and, you know, piles of books everywhere, but it was ridiculous. But we both knew we were stood in what could easily have been Felix's room, and I definitely used that as inspiration. Even the smell was, we managed to create in his room.
Because when I saw that, when we first see Felix in his room and that mess, and of course Ollie has to make a comment about, you know, don't you ever clean or something, and just, I immediately flash back to my brother's room at home, and the smell, it's like, where is that smell coming from?
Yeah.
So,
boy smell, yeah, very weird.
You really created a full sensory experience with this film, because not only do we have what you have done with the university aspect and the rooms and the pub they all hang out in, but when we're looking at Saltburn itself, and everything in there, what you have done is just amazing. But I'm very curious, because I know I've spoken with other production designers and cinematographers on with some of these other British period pieces using these historic residences, and you can't alter this, and you can't hammer into this, and you can't nail into that. How did this impact your production design specifically for the Saltburn estate?
So we were really, really lucky. So first up, that house had never been filmed in before. We found it. It's like a virgin film house. They'd never had a film crew there before. And when Emerald and I recce'd it, we both had an Oliver moment and thought, okay, well, there's no point looking for any other properties, because one, most properties that you're allowed to film in have been used, you know, hundreds of times now, and we knew this needed to feel different. And when we first went there, it felt different, and we just knew we wanted to go here. And, you know, we did put on a bit of a charm offensive. I mean, Emerald is very eloquent and likeable, and the family that lived there just sort of welcomed us with open arms. So part of my job then, along with the location team, is to be very clear with our intentions of what we wanted to do. Because it wasn't owned by the National Trust or English Heritage, it's a privately owned house, I was able to push a little bit more than I would have done.
Mm.
And they allowed me to paint rooms, to rip out bedrooms, to install bathrooms, paint woodwork, take down some of their paintings, install some of ours. You know, I had free rein. It's a house that has 127 rooms, and I more or less had the choice of any, you know, we had the choice of any room we wanted to use within reason. And I was very clear with my wishes and my intentions and how we get from A to B, you know, what we would do, our objectives, and they trusted us, and I trusted my team to take care and be respectful of the property. I mean, the family, it's so big that the family lived there whilst we were filming. And, you know, they probably wouldn't even know we were filming half the time because it's so big. But they joined in, and we became, you know, the whole crew, cast and owners all became one big happy family. And, we left with what I feel a very clean sort of bill of health. You know, we didn't wreck the house. We put it back as we found it. But the fact that they let me, you know, add all those colours, hang all those slash curtains, change the paintings, have that massive party scene, build a maze, all of that was testament to them. And, to, you know, a good location team doing their finest of diplomatic relations.
I know how strict and how stringent the rules are and what you can do with these protected homes. So that's fascinating that you actually...
I tell you, the other thing that was really important and that allowed us to do that is that I think sometimes when we... Because we know those sort of historical properties, you sort of... There's a certain distance between... Even if you go and visit them, don't sit on that, don't touch that, don't move that, you know. And we wanted to... inhabit this environment and sit in. It needed to feel really lived in, you know, it's like broken things or overflowing ashtrays or sort of wonky pictures even, you know, like a big Caravaggio oil painting, mm-hmm. that a dog had knocked or something, you know, or that a candle had been put too close to and the oil had started to melt in it. All those sort of things I wanted to feel were possible in the viewing of this film.
How much of the original accoutrement and decor in the house, especially like the living room, where we have several scenes in the living room, and we have some of those large paintings on the walls. Was any of the original furniture, any of the owner's furniture and tchotchkes and decor there? Or did you trade all that out and bring in? Because you have a lot of that is so beautiful and is so rich in color and texture that it has the patina and feel that has been there forever.
So I love that you picked that one because that is all us. That was a pretty plain room in the corner of the property and they allowed me to put that silk wallpaper up, to paint the woodwork, to put in a bright bubble gum carpet, to add all those pictures. We had a fantastic fine artist called Jason Lyne who did a lot of the portraiture of the family, of our real cast that we hung on the walls. And then my fantastic set decorator, Charlotte Durix, filled the house, and in particular that room, busting with the scenes with characterful dressing. You know, we had rood art, we had, you know, the big telly, or mm-hmm. all the Charles sofa that we had reupholstered. We found at some random antiques market and reupholstered and then aged down. You know, we had a aging team that went in once we'd reupholstered the furniture, they go in with sandpaper to then age it back to make it feel like it's been lived in for, you know, 10, 15 years. Because we gave the backstory to when did Elspeth do up this room? You know, this is their sort of comfy room. They've got all these other rooms that they could hang out in, but everyone likes this room. So it needed to feel more perhaps homely and a little bit more contemporary than some of the more state rooms.
Mm-hmm. And we get that feeling as we go through and the camera travels through the house and we've got these dark woods, these beautiful burnished woods that we see on some of them, such as in the hallway by the bathroom, the closets, Felix's room, Oliver's room. And then we've got the beautiful hallway with all those tall windows and the lighter drapes. While that family room, that living room again, we get to the one point in the film where it's the dark, heavy drapes. The kind of drapes you'd expect Scarlett O'Hara to be ripping down and making a dress out of.
Absolutely.
But the detail that you brought to this is just, Susie, is just spectacular.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It's great when people notice the detail, you know, as much as it's not, you know, it's about the story that we're telling. It's, you know, as a designer, you want your designs to complement and enhance the story, and it's great when people notice it, yeah.
Well, and in this, it's so important because all of these details inform us as to who this family of nut jobs are. Let's call a spade a spade.
Exactly.
They're all a little bit off kilter. Except for Felix. Felix is really pretty normal.
He's such a gentle soul, isn't he, really? And he gets mixed up with his bunch.
You've got this beautiful pond area to work with. You're building the maze. You've got the party scene. What kind of work went into that? With the pool and the pond, with the lily pads and all, is that natural? Did you also work on that? Talk me through some of this.
So when we found this house, there were elements of the script that Emerald was able to adapt to suit the idiosyncrasies that the property gave us. So, for instance, there wasn't anything to do with a square pond. Who would have thought you had a square, you know, not every house has a square pond.
No.
So when we saw it, we decided, you know, well, Emerald decided that she's going to play some of the scenes in the square pond. So when I decided and read those scenes, I decided, okay, I'm going to put a pontoon in there because I could see that's going to be a quite a useful staging area. So we built the pontoon. fighting to this area. I mean, it was acres and acres that we ended up dressing. But the practical lighting was important so that then Lena's had an option to light our story as well. There was a reason there. So those lovely massive oversized lilies that light up in the pond, mm-hmm. just worked gloriously, and we lucked out with that, with those morning scenes when we see Oliver at the end of the pontoon in his party outfit, you know, reflecting on what he's been up to. I mean, it's just such a beautiful scene with such an uncomfortable thing that's happened. But it was, yeah, all those sort of elements, and building the maze. The maze wasn't there, so that's all your classic movie magic of smoke and mirrors, and a collaboration between what I built, the jail and the Minotaurs, and the Minotaurs and the grotto. The elements of running through the hedge corridors are only, you know, there's only probably about 20, 30 foot of that we built, because once you're in a maze, you don't really know which way you're going. Right. And then, you know, the big, I think we had a 2-meter glitter ball in that party, and all the lovely neon lights. We just threw everything at it, and it took us about 2 days to dress the party. I just had lucked out with one of the best art department teams, and we lucked out with the weather as well. So we had a real fun time dressing the party. Yeah.
Yeah, I was curious about the maze because Linus told me that he did LED backlighting in the maze that he could turn on and off as people were going, as you were going through the maze. So I was curious how much was built. But yeah, 20 or 30 meters, that's still a good size.
Yeah, 20 or 30 meters, but it's sort of like a straight hedging. It's really interesting because when I first read it, I was like, oh my God, how am I going to make a maze? But when you drill into the scenes, it becomes very clear that actually, when we see the top shot of the maze, which was a real, we had a maze designer design the pattern, mm-hmm. and then VFX created it, and it worked, and it makes sense, and we had the cheats maze, the cheats route, and the quick route, but all of those sort of elements came, and the Minotaurs, you know, the Minotaur and the labyrinth of the story just became such a strong motive. You know, we see mazes throughout the film, not just the real maze, but we see the maze wallpaper, the maze on the floor of the tiles in the bathroom, mm-hmm. there's little knots. All, you know, it's lovely sort of like dressing in those little elements that maybe on the second or third time of seeing it, you might pick up.
Talk to me about the importance of color in your designs, because especially, again, in that living room, there's the heavy, the burgundy drapes that are so important as we move into the story, actually going into the third act. The darker tones that are brought in versus the blues and grays of the university, and then the complete contrast of going to Oliver's house, which is, it's normal.
Yeah, it's normal, isn't it? But the thing with Oliver's house, because our sort of color palettes are your classic red and green, really, to start off with our richness of those bright poppy colors as well. And even at Oliver's parents' house, it's red and green, but it's like the pastel tones.
Yes.
And it's like, I felt like Oliver's mum would have gone to Saltburn on a National Trust visit and probably got the Saltburn book and has a naive desire that maybe is what's triggered Oliver to desire and obsess. But his mum has a naive desire. You know, they have tapestry curtains hanging in their little three-bedroomed house on a suburban street in Liverpool. You know, it's sort of those sort of elements when you compare it to the topiary in the gardens in Saltburn, and then they have a little topiary box hedge in a pot outside the front door. You know, it was really fun playing with all of that sort of aspect. You know, they have a tapestry cushion. Mm-hmm. Saltburn has tapestries in every room, you know? So it was that lovely, innocent desire and naive desire that his parents had that was fun to put in. And all the colour palette was really, you know, driven as much by Emerald and this basic Caravaggio palette, mm-hmm. but some real strong pops of contemporary poppy colours. You know, like Felix's bed, which we only sort of glance at when we walk through his bedroom, was a four-poster bed, but we sent off to a car spray company that sprayed it with a high-gloss turquoise blue. And it was those things that just worked. You know, it needed to have an effortless style. all looks beautiful all of the time, if you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely. But I love the whole maze pattern that we could see in the floor. And even in the hallway, in that final, in our running naked through the house scene, he's running in circular motions. He's in a maze going through hallways and all. But if we look at the floor, the wood or the tile that was there, it definitely has a maze pattern to that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I guess because I was thinking that we finish in a very red room, but you're right, we finish in the hallway because we've been into Elspeth's room, which was full of red. It was red on red on red. And then I love this ending because it feels really joyful. You don't expect this to end here, do you? It's like, what is going on? Where are we? And you're quite right. It feels like he's now sort of conquered the maze, maybe, at the end.
Yeah, it's really open to a metaphoric interpretation. But all of that ties in with the color and with your design and this maze at the heart of everything, this maze of Oliver's life that he's trying to work through to become Felix or to become something that he's not. Your work...
Yeah, probably. It'd be after the person, the wealth, all of it, the family, the history. It's so interesting, isn't it?
It's fascinating because we have the incredible... Sophie's incredible costumes... The rich, lush gowns that Rosamund gets to wear as Elspeth. Poor dear Pamela. I don't know what we can say about poor dear Pamela.
I know. We want to see more of her. I think there should be a spin-off. I know she's died, but maybe she gets reincarnated somehow.
Such a fascinating character. And I love how Sophie dressed her in the neons, the glitter, things. And it was contrasting what you did with the furnishings.
I loved it the first day because I hadn't seen, no one had really seen Carrie as poor dear Pamela until the day we were filming on set. And I popped my head into the first day we filmed with her, we were in the library room, the room we spoke about with the Bubble King bubble gum carpet. And she was dressed in all these other layers of red. I mean, it was just and her hair, like what Sian did with her makeup and hair, was just amazing. I just loved her in that, all those colors all clashing yet working so beautifully together.
I really loved how she stood out against what you had done with the furnishings and the color that you were working with. That was that really set her apart from the rest of this family.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, she was on her own path, wasn't she?
Yes. Now, what would you say, what was the most challenging aspect of bringing Saltburn to life from your perspective?
I think it was taking care of that beautiful house and persuading the owners to let us do what we did there. It is and was a beautiful property, but I think we had to do what we did to it. We had to add that colour, and the fact that we, myself and the locations team and production, gave this family the utmost confidence that we weren't going to wreck their house, and how my team were just so respectful, working in that environment meant that we ended up with a really strong piece, I think. So I think that was the most challenging thing on the whole.
And as you look back on the film, is there one thing that you and your team did of which you are the most proud of when you see it on screen? Or that gives you the most joy?
It's difficult. I mean, I can remember looking at some of the rushes and some of the composition that Emerald and Linus had got, the top shot of Venetia lying on the pontoon with the watermelon amongst the lilies, the shot of Barry looking at the house again at the end of the pontoon with those lilies there. The family out dining in the courtyard. There's so many images that I feel very satisfied that we absolutely got the best out of what every department gave. I think Emerald's ended up with something that is so collaborative, but so, I would say you've spoken to probably most of the other HODs, I'd say we all feel very satisfied that our efforts sort of came to something, and we're used well and seen and added to the story, yeah.
Susie, this is delicious, divine decadence, watching this film.
Oh, thank you. They're good words to use, yeah, delicious, divine, and decadent. That's perfect.
Twisted psychological thriller. It's steeped in rich character studies that are metaphorically brought to life through equally rich and tapestried production design and then cinematography showcasing that. This is just so exquisitely done. I love it, Susie, and I love your work, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Susie, and I hope we get to chat again in the future.
For sure. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Cheers, bye.